Welcome to the Point Forward Podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward Podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. The Milwaukee Bucks are up 2-1 in the Eastern Conference semifinals against the Boston Celtics. Oh, it was close. On Saturday, a shot at the buzzer, a tip-in by Al Horford. No good just after the buzzer sounds, and the Bucks prevail 103-101. It was exciting. On the other line is Jim Ozarski. He is the Bucks reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Jim, that was a tough one. Many stats get cited pretty much every year, but the winner of Game 3, at least in the case of the Bucks in the Mike Budenholzer era, has never lost a playoff series. So this definitely bodes well for Milwaukee. A very tough defensive battle. And I don't know, maybe a little concerning because Jason Tatum played very poorly for Boston. The Bucks had to kind of scratch and claw, still got 44 points or 42 points, I've already forgotten, from Giannis. So they did get their star bouncing back, and still, this came down to literally the final second of play. I guess off the top, how concerning is that? How big of a deal do you think it is that Boston does seem to be able to, I don't want to say have Milwaukee's number, but they're a tough matchup for this team.
They are, and I'm not really, win by one, win by 30 at this point, Jar. I think they won the game, and give Boston credit. I thought this was over in the third quarter when the Bucks went up 14. I thought when Giannis's three made it a 13-point game with 9 minutes left in regulation that it was over. And lo and behold, Boston takes a lead, with 90 seconds, 2 minutes left. So credit to Boston. I still wouldn't be shocked if this went seven games as I thought at the start of this thing, JR. It's two good teams. I realize this was the first close one the Bucks have played, really, this whole playoff, maybe game two. That Chris Middleton got hurt, they started the rally, but they were down big. So if anything, JR, I think the fact that the Bucks were able to close out a close game for the first time without their quote unquote closer in Chris Middleton, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't the way you draw it up, but I'd actually go the other way. I'd venture to say that, there was more of a positive to win it that way than maybe being concerned that Boston came back.
I guess that is one way to look at it. It was 42 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists for Giannis, who, of course, had a triple-double in Game 2, so he continues to be, the best player in the NBA. And we'll talk about that standing, the MVP award getting announced Monday morning. As we expected, it was Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets who repeats as MVP. Giannis not in that equation, as we knew would be the case, but we'll come back to that. Let's talk about the one thing that everyone is talking about from this game, and that is the officiating. There was sort of, maybe a disproven tenet in journalism that if both sides are unhappy with something, then you must be doing a good job. I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that's disproven a little bit, but I don't know if officials feel the same way, but both sides are very unhappy. So I guess they must think they're doing a good job. I don't know. The big play in the game that everyone, at least on Boston's side, has zoomed in on came late when the Celtics were down three. Marcus Smart attempts kind of a three-point shot and gets followed by Jrue Holiday. Now, the NBA has really tried to crack down on what we kind of call rip-throughs or just in general sort of lame attempts at the basket as a shooter is drawing contact with the express purpose, not even of coming close to making the shot, but of getting that contact and getting the free throws that come with it. In this case, it would have been three free throws with a chance to tie the game in the final seconds. Officials ruled no, that was not a shooting foul. Instead, he gets two free throws because the Celtics were in the bonus. He makes the first, misses the second. Chaos ensues. It very nearly cost the Bucks a chance there in regulation. It almost went to overtime anyway. But certainly Boston fans were upset that Smart was not awarded all three free throws. Now, Bucks fans are pointing out that the Bucks did not shoot any free throws, any, after like the 4-minute mark of the third quarter, that the Celtics shot the final 17 free throws in that game. I I bristle a little at free throw disparity because I feel like officials aren't just going to invent fouls. I mean, if you can give specific examples where you felt like the Bucks should have been awarded a foul or foul shots, I'm okay with that. But like, just looking at the disparity to me is always a little bit difficult to work with. But obviously, both sides were not happy with how this game was officiated. Give me your full take on how you think the officials did, how you think it's been in this series, and I mean, does this just sort of come back to the broader issue of it's hard to officiate when you've got two great defensive teams, and especially when Giannis is one of the most difficult players to officiate in all of basketball.
Yeah, it's funny. I guess I'm gonna have the maybe perhaps the unpopular opinion here for both fan bases, JR. So maybe that means I'm right. It probably does.
You're right. You're
I
absolutely right.
think this is so overblown and unnecessary, and it's pretty weak. Like I think Ime Udoka's been weak with his complaining. There's no other word for it. I think, the Bucks are trying to respond in kind because they probably feel like, well, he's doing it, Memphis is doing it, Golden State's doing it, we need to jump in. I mean,
It's brutal.
whatever, man. Like the free throw, just look, they were in the bonus. Don't foul. And I get what you're trying to say. I get what the fans are saying. Well, there's too many fouls. What? I don't know. This is a tale as old as time, man. Like I don't really understand why this matters more now. Like I get it. You ran through the numbers. I understand. Jrue Holiday takes 30 shots. He doesn't go to the free throw line. Boston's mad because, rip through or shooting motion, which, the league reviewed the under 2 minute. They deemed it the correct call, and they're not afraid to throw their officials under the bus in those last 2 minute reports, man. They'll definitely catalog if calls were wrong. Jrue even said in the post game, he's like, guys like me get away with more in the playoffs. I mean, they know what it is. I think I get it. I do. I think it's just muddying up what's really interesting basketball, what's really well played defense. Maybe JR, this is like a correction of, like baseball, right? Where there was too much fun. So the league's like, wait a minute, wait a minute. We got to deaden the ball. Can't have too much fun. It's like people got so used to scoring 130 points a game that, this is like throwback style. I mean, 101, right? Like that's you're working hard, score 100 points. I don't know, man. I just feel like I get it, and I don't mean to rain on anybody's parade, but I just feel like just it is what it is, and I don't know. I mean, I get what you're saying at the top there, Jared, where it's like, oh, if both sides are complaining, must be true, or it must be done right. I tend to go with that. You're right. It's not so much disparity to me, but I think at one point, JR, the foul calls were, I'm gonna look this up while we're 22 to 22 at one point. Yes, the Bucks that maybe that was game two. Bucks had 27 fouls. Celtics 21. I mean, that happens. I don't know, man. I just feel like I haven't, not that I haven't noticed it. You notice when the game drags out because there's so many whistles. I don't know. Maybe you can disagree with me. I just feel like it's such a, I think that coaches and any players who complain about it, you're just sort of taken away from what you're trying to do. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, a couple thoughts. Actually, I do agree with you. I really, I hear people's complaints. I just didn't think this one was all that bad. Now, Celtics fans, because of the final 2 minute report, they confirmed that that wasn't a shot by Marcus Smart. That made everybody feel better in Boston. They totally are like, oh, yeah, we see it now. And they've totally moved on. That's exactly what's happened. The Bill Simmons and his Hive, very, totally fine with it. No big deal.
Right.
What do you think of that play, that shot? In the moment, I thought, yeah, that's a shooting foul, or at least I thought that's how it would be called. I kind of was sort of impressed that it maybe wasn't called that way. And like I said, NBA's been emphasizing that, not to just allow players to lamely throw up shots. I mean, if we're being honest with ourselves, Chris Middleton is kind of an artist in this regard, where he and I still think he gets calls where he gets to shoot free throws for shots that he had no intention of shooting or making until he knew he could get some contact. So obviously, in that situation, down three, the Celtics are hunting for some opportunity like that. We could even tie this into the argument of whether you foul up three. That's a really big thing in college basketball. I personally think in the NBA, it is just so much more dangerous because you do have guys who can just get rebounds and free throws because they're 7 foot and huge, huge bodies. I think you're running a much greater risk than maybe in college, but that's more of a basketball philosophy thing. You might feel differently. I don't know. But this particular play, the Jrue Holiday foul that sent Marcus Smart to the line for two and not three, what did you think of that in the moment?
In live speed in the moment, I thought it was a foul on the ground.
You did? Okay.
I didn't think he had gotten up to the point where he was fouled in the act of shooting, And I hope this doesn't turn into the whole, look, JR, I covered the NFL far too long. I was there for the catch or non-catch. Des Bryant, Packers, Lambeau Field. I was there for that game.
Did Dez catch it?
I don't want this to turn into that. In the NBA, right? Like, what is the shooting motion? Right? But to me, in live speed on the floor, I saw it as a foul on the floor. And the league reviewed it and agreed with its officials. So to me, that's it, man. Look, Marcus Smart had a perfectly executed second intentional missed free throw. They got two shots at that. Almost had the third. I mean, look, man, I get it. If the shoe was on the other foot and that was Jrue Holiday shooting two, and Bucks fans would be just as mad. Let's not pretend, So I just feel like it's I just feel like it whatever the fouls are called, they're It's just a matter of, are there enough for a bonus? And that's what happened to the Bucks. Celtics got to the bonus pretty early. Giannis, look, man, Giannis didn't go to the line. The series, Jared, it's not new. It's not like these first two games he didn't go to the free throw line. That's just the way they're calling it. It's just what it is. And I feel like I feel like Jared, it's again, I have to use other sport analogies. It's like the strike zone in that first inning or two, right? What is it? You're gonna find out. Might not like it. But it's kind of been what it is. I would be, I don't know. Maybe Giannis shoots 15 free throws again the rest of the series. But it just feels like this is what it's been, and there's no sense. I don't understand. I guess I feel like the politicking that the Phil Jacksons of the world did maybe worked. I don't know. I just feel like it's all wasted on the team's parts. What are you're not worried about the right thing. Like Wes Matthews holding Jason Tatum for 0 for 10, and Tatum's sitting there post game saying, man, I'm in my head, I'm thinking too much, which is, by the way, the same thing they said after game one. Like that if you're the Bucks, who cares how many free throws Giannis shoots? That's the thing that matters. And if you're the Celtics, win the game or do right. Like, to me, I just feel like it's a cop out for either bad play or poor execution or bad coaching decisions. Let's find some third party to make the problem. That's just how I view this stuff, man.
Here's where I think the officiating has changed a little bit as the playoffs have gone on. I don't think flops are being awarded quite as much in this series as they were against Chicago. I mentioned earlier I thought Giannis had a triple double in game two. That was game one, but Giannis was held in check here the last couple games, first two games of this series. He goes off for 42 points here in the third game. He's much more effective, and I don't know if that's directly a result of him not getting whistled for as many offensive fouls, but it seems like, either because Boston isn't going for the flops as much. Ime Udoka, of course, indicating after game three that maybe he would tell his team to flop more. But I do feel like there's a little more restraint there with officials not going for those obvious flop calls. There was a couple examples where, Giannis got easy dunks because the defender fell down, seemingly trying to draw a foul, and then the official said nothing, and the Giannis just took it to the rack. So, do you feel that? Do you think that maybe we've seen a little bit curtailing of that? I mean, you're always hearing about flops, especially in these playoffs. Feels like a lot of people commenting that teams are, that's their line of defense. Their way of defense is to simply fall down and hope for the whistle. I feel like, though, that's improved, and maybe that's just my perspective. What do you think about that?
No, I agree. And I think honestly, that's one of the reasons why they've given Giannis the problems they've given him. Is because they're staying on their feet. Grant Williams, Al Horford, Robert Williams. Those guys aren't sliding around as now. Look, I understand there was one call on Williams where him and Giannis kind of collided in the paint. Giannis threw a big old back into him. And I mean, you look at the physics of it, to me, that one made sense that Grant Williams fell down. But for the most part, look, you're right. I think officials aren't going to reward that in these games. So I don't, you're not seeing 35-year-old Al Horford sliding around the floor, are you? You know what I
No.
mean? Like it, that Robert Williams and his help side defense is going up to block shots. And be so I think if you're the Celtics, you definitely want to keep doing that. And maybe that was, Marcus Smart, I think, is a different dude. I think that's part of his style, right? Is to hit the floor, in whatever fashion you want to call that. But these bigs for the Celtics, they're keeping their feet and they're making Giannis work. Horford and Williams, how many times did Giannis throw a shoulder into Grant Williams in game two and Grant Williams went nowhere? And Giannis had to settle for a, maybe a not in rhythm jumper, right? Like, I think that's a credit to the Celtics. Giannis, for hit to his credit, then figured out a way to try to get around that without, maybe putting himself in position for offensive fouls. So yeah, I mean, look, the Bulls series, Jerry, we talked about it. What the Bulls drew 7, 8 offensive fouls on Giannis. So the Celtics aren't doing that. They're playing them straight up. So I think that, again, this goes back to this a broader conversation. There's so much good being done on both ends, just really, really high level smart defense, that I feel like focusing on a whistle is just diminishing what's actually happening. That's, again, because I think both teams deserve a ton of credit for what they're doing to one another through three games or these early games, JR. And I just, I think that needs to be respected as opposed to wondering why they're not getting third party help.
Game four of this series is Monday night at Pfizer Forum. As many people know, Wednesday the series returns to Boston for game five. I feel like it's very clear right now that they miss Chris Middleton because you talked about that defensive ability to sort of stand up Giannis. Well, it would be nice to have that mid-range jump shooter that can just shoot over that. And not having Chris Middleton, I think, seems to pretty obviously have been an issue in game two and game three against Boston. Grayson Allen had 0 points in game three. So the sort of spot up shooting that was so prevalent against the Bulls is not as available to them. As we suspected would be the case, and Grayson struggling a little bit, that leaves them short on offense a little bit. I mean, it's crazy to say because the Bucks are up 2-1, and to say, can they win this series without Chris Middleton? Like they're up 2-1. Yeah, of course they can. But Jim, I feel like they need him back, and I don't know if it's even feasible that they get him back for maybe game six, game seven, any part of this series. But that is an element they deeply miss. And if they're going to win this series without him, I think it's going to look a lot like the Brooklyn series of last year, where they caught some breaks, maybe some injury breaks, maybe it's just some breaks in general, and were able to find a way, but only by the skin of their teeth. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think, JR, I think I said that I picked the Bucks in seven, and that was even, I wasn't gonna think that Chris Middleton could play. I mean, they do need him back to win a title. I don't, I don't think if you squeak by the Celtics, that means you can win the East, or you can beat whatever team in the West without them. I think there's a matchup thing here with Boston that sort of allows the Bucks to play with their two stars and maybe work around it otherwise. But yeah, he's so credit to the Bucks, man. I mean, basketball is not a sport, where you just lose a three-time All-Star. Like, not many teams have those guys, and then let alone, oh, he can't play. And you're still maybe can win a series. So I agree with you. And that's where I go back to the start of this. I think the Bucks get a lot of credit, should get a lot of credit for winning a close one without a guy who, when they win close games, has a lot to do with it. I mean, the way Giannis has to get a shot is not the same way Chris Middleton can and will and win you a game. I mean, even Jrue Holiday with that floater, again, it looks different. It takes a little more work. Chris, I know JR fans kind of get, oh, he's only taking contested shots. Chris Middleton's 6'7" with what, a 6'9" wingspan, something like that.
Yeah,
I mean,
contested doesn't mean like in danger of being blocked.
right. And so on TV, it might look like a tough shot, but that's open for Chris Middleton. So I think you would think you would have to say that to Bucks fans after a decade of watching that dude, but it's you're right. Like the two-man game with Giannis, the pick and roll, I mean, it changes so much for the Bucks. That's another reason why Giannis has had just all kinds of trouble having space. Because frankly, JR, like the Celtics don't have to respect Jrue Holiday's mid-range game like that. They don't have to. And they won't. Grayson Allen, Pat Connaughton, same deal, man. It's not the same. So no, they need him. Now, if fans are listening to this, I'm sure they'll remember back to what Mike Budenholzer said, where Budenholzer would not rule out Chris Middleton for the series. Who knows? Game seven would be about 4 weeks. and maybe that's something that could happen. I don't know. I mean, I think we're still in that gray area for until he's back, right? But no, I agree with you, JR. It's they gotta swim upstream, man. And I think if they can win it as fast as possible, that's the best bet. But the Celtics are for sure gonna make it tough.
Shout out to Eric Name of The Athletic with the "I think you should leave too small" meme every time Chris Middleton sizes up an opponent and simply shoots over him for a mid-range J. That's kind of what you're talking about. He's just taller and like he's going to get up higher than everybody else, so he can afford to take those shots, and they frequently go in. The Bucks, Jrue Holiday, 25 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists in game 3. He has the shot, like you mentioned, the big basket to put them up 3, kind of a, I don't want to call it a broken play, but it was a little bit of a scramble, and that ends up being the biggest shot of the game. And defensively, you just can't say enough about what he's doing. Brook Lopez, you can't say enough about what he's doing. He had a double-double in game 3. He had a really big shot with some contact late in the game, and they would be absolutely lost if they did not have him. But as far as defense goes, Wesley Matthews, man, he is having a very good time. I look back and I wonder, Jim, how in the world was this man on a couch at the beginning of the season? How could no NBA team find room for him? Is it maybe because his defense just only works in the context of, I don't know, of a really strong defensive team? Like I mean, this guy is clearly still a high level NBA contributor. If you want to say he's this year's PJ Tucker, I mean, you probably, I don't know, that might be a reach, but maybe not when you see what he was able to do in game 3. Jason Tatum was just a non-factor in this game, and I don't know if you can expect that to happen again and again, but man, Wesley Matthews was really on somebody's couch at the start of the year, Jim. Does that just boggle your mind like it boggles mine?
I mean, yes, but no. I mean, he is a perfect fit for the Bucks. He is not asked to do certain things on offense. I don't want to say that he's totally like PJ Tucker, and I think Wes has a little bit more to his game yet at this point. But look, Jerry's 35 years old. You know what I mean? And that this is a 3-and-D league, and okay, we're seeing he could play the defense, but he shot 33% from three this year, 33% last year, you know, 36% with the Bucks in 1920. You know, that's a decent number. But now you got to go all the way back to, you know, his 44 games in Dallas in 18-19, where he's at 38%. So, like, you know, when you're 35, I think, JR, the difference in team scouting, okay, he's 35 now versus 32, right? As opposed to when he's 30 and 27 or 27, 25. So I just feel like it just makes sense. Like 35-year-old, 36-year-old guards aren't really going to be highly coveted. So I'm not surprised he was out there. I think he is just because I think JR, another team, would need him to score. Like if he's going to start and play 27 to 35 minutes a game, like dude's going to have to take more than three shots. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just feel like it's what he is, what he does right now is a square peg in the square space, you know, like it's a perfect fit. And so it makes a lot of sense actually that he's doing this for the Bucks. PJ Tucker, because PJ loves Milwaukee, loves talking about Milwaukee. I think he said again, which he said over and over again, he wanted to come back, was disrespected, and they thought he could be replaced. And I think the thing he said is they did replace him, and they have. So yeah, I think Wesley Matthews is filling that role. It's just that they don't have to deal with 6'11 Kevin Durant, you know. So maybe Wesley's having a little easy. I don't want to call Jason Tatum easy or DeMar DeRozan easy or Jimmy Butler or James Harden. You know, I'm not going to go there, but it's not Kevin Durant. It's 6'11. Yeah, man. All the credit to Wes for that stuff because he's, you know. Ben Steele wrote it, man. He got his body ready, man. He was ready for this. He knew this is what was coming, and so far it's working out.
Do you think the Bucks are getting enough from, I would call them their bench, but it's really more like the fifth starter and the bench at this point, that being the Bobby Portis, Grayson Allen, Pat Connaughton triumvirate. You know, I mentioned Allen was scoreless. He only had 5 points in game two. This is not the same series matchup for him as Chicago was. You know, Connaughton and Portis are double-digit scorers still, and were obviously massive contributors to what they did last year. We saw Connaughton hit a couple big shots in the first part of the game. In game three on Saturday. Do you feel like they're getting enough there, or do they have to find another gear or somebody else contributing to get through the Celtics?
I mean, the easy answer is, you know, they need more. But I don't know if the Celtics are going to let that happen. So on one hand, it's, yeah, Grayson Allen would be great if he scored 18 points like he did against the Bulls, or Pat Connaughton hit 5 threes. I don't know if the Celtics are going to let that happen, JR. So I think what it's going to have to be is Brooke Lopez scoring 11 points in the first half, right? It's going to be, you know, Bobby Portis, I think he opened the series with a double-double.
He did.
Nearly had another one in game two. Yeah. So Bobby's, I think, being Bobby. So I don't know. So let's put Bobby aside.
Sure.
So Connaughton, Allen.
Maybe like Javon Carter and the little bit.
Yeah, well, George Hill. I don't know if we're going to see Javon again. I don't know if George Hill. I think George and Wes are, you got to put in a corner. So I think they're not going to shoot. So what are we talking about here? So now we're talking about Grayson Allen and Pat Connaughton. And I feel like if one of them can get to double digits, like that's probably a good day. this loops back to the Chris Middleton thing, JR. I mean, it's that much harder for these guys to score, get spacing, get the shots they want, because that's one less actual scorer. And you know, fans, you know what I'm trying to say here with Chris Middleton, that the Celtics don't have to pay attention to. So are they getting enough? I mean, they've won enough games without Chris Middleton for me to say yes. It's just one of those guys, JR. Game two to me was Brooke Lopez, 11 points in the first half, 13 overall. You know, maybe going forward, Grayson Allen hits four threes. Maybe Pat hits three, you know. So it's enough. They're just getting by. So I can't say it's not enough because they won, what, 5 of 6 without Middleton? I got to give them their credit, but I feel like there's, you know, I don't know if Boston's going to let them be more than that.
So Monday morning, like I said, the MVP award announced as expected. Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets wins the award. He is now a two-time winner, so Giannis goes back-to-back. Jokic goes back-to-back right after him. The Nuggets, of course, are out of the playoffs at this point. And that was, I think, one of the talking points in favor of Giannis or Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers. These guys are higher seeds than Denver. Denver is a playoff team, but not a top team in the Western Conference. And that was borne out in the playoffs. I don't know if there's a whole lot to say here. Like, we all saw this coming. But it's funny because I feel like Giannis is kind of in this LeBron space where maybe he doesn't win the MVP, but everybody is still saying, oh, that's the best player in basketball. That's the best player in the NBA. And I don't disagree with that. So I don't know. I don't know if you'll ultimately think history looks back on this and say, why was no one talking about Giannis as MVP in 2021, 22? I don't know if it really matters. It certainly doesn't matter to the Bucks or to Giannis himself, but do you have any thoughts left on the MVP chase?
It's more of a reminder of that it's a regular season award. And I look, LeBron won four MVPs, JR, to your point. He won 4 in 5 years from 08 to 13. Hasn't won another one.
No.
Would you say that maybe he should have been an MVP of the decade since then?
I would say,
right?
Yes.
Like, so I just feel like to your point, I don't know what Jordan won five.
Well, Kobe's won one.
Yeah, Kareem won six. I could be wrong. Giannis says he wants to play. What'd he tell me when he broke Kareem's record? He wants to play 20 years in the league. I don't think we're going to get another five-time MVP winner. Don't think the way that this has gone, it's that, like, Giannis may win another one. You know, maybe he wins two more in the next 10 years. But, like, the math says, it's like you win the two, and then it's on to the next. And you're right, JR. Maybe you're always finishing second or third, or you're in the conversation. Which, look, if you're a Bucks fan, that means your man is one of the best, if not the best player in the league. It just so happened that particular year, someone else, you know, was quote-unquote most valuable. I don't know, man. I think you're right. I think that's all you can say. LeBron won four in 5 years, hasn't touched it in a decade. Jordan won five. Like, I just that's the space, which is a good space to be in if you're a player. And if you're a fan, it's a talking point, and you should feel good that you have a guy that's good.
Yeah, Kareem, you know, I would say Jokic is kind of one of one. Giannis is kind of one of one. There aren't many players like him, but back in Kareem's day, there was just truly, truly nothing else like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which is why he rises so high above everybody else to those MVP votes, you know, and winds up with six of those. Like, you're just not going to have that. I mean, LeBron is the perfect example. LeBron is probably the greatest player of all time, and I'm sure Michael Jordan stands will fight me on that, and maybe they're right. I don't know. But he's at least in the conversation at the highest point. Four MVPs doesn't feel like somebody that you would say is the greatest player of all time. You would think like six or seven or eight. But yeah, even the first award that Giannis got, LeBron was heavily in conversation for that one, or maybe that was the second one. And it would have been defensible to have LeBron in his in his mid-30s win another MVP award. So Nikola Jokic gets his award. His team is home for the holidays, home for the summer. What is it? Cancun, is that the phrase? The meme? that gets used. So Bucks fans can relish in that a little bit. Okay, that wraps it up again. Game four, huge game four at Pfizer Forum Monday night, later tonight if you are listening to this right off the bat. Let's move into our friendly features for the week. We're going to start with one quick buck.
Desmond Mason with authority. Man. Monte Ellis puts it up at the buzzer and got it.
No way.
Monte Ellis wins the game and then heads to the locker room. No.
You got to be kidding me. Charlie Villanueva. He has got the mojo going.
To the bell, man. In your face, Brad Lohan.
The Milwaukee Bucks select Larry Sanders from Virginia Commonwealth University. Larry is not here.
One quick buck.
All right, this one's kind of an obvious one. Al Horford, Boston Celtics, is one of the key players for the opposing team at this point. Al Horford has been a problem for the Bucks a lot over the years. He's a guy that the Bucks have seen in the playoffs before with the Celtics in 2019. And was he on that Hawks team, wasn't he? That the Bucks almost took to seven games, or did take to seven games in 2010. The Fear of the Deer team. I should look that up. I don't actually know that off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure. I'm going to have to Google that while I'm talking. But Al Horford's father, Tito Horford, was a member of the Milwaukee Bucks. Tito Horford played 3 years with the Bucks from 1988 to 1990. A very short-lived career. He played in France, Italy, Brazil. After that, he did come back to Washington for the 93-94 season. I thought Tito Horford was a long-standing player in the NBA. I was kind of surprised to see that his career ended up being very short. He was a very popular player in Milwaukee. Chants of Tito, mostly ran unrequited because he averaged 1.7 points and 1.5 rebounds per game. Or no, 1.7 points, 1.5 points in his two seasons with the Bucks. Rebounds that, you know, close one and a half. He played in just 60 total games with the Bucks, fewer than 350 total minutes. He was not a guy who was a regular feature on the floor. But he was more of a project. He was born in the Dominican Republic. He attended school in Houston. There were some eligibility issues with transcript stuff, so he actually wasn't able to play at Houston, had trouble at LSU, ended up at Miami, so there was all kinds of weird recruiting violations that didn't have anything really to do with him per se, but just the way the schools handled it. He was taken with the 39th pick in 1988. That made him the first Dominican-born player in the NBA. Del Harris, he was in charge of the Bucks at the time, and he was really a big believer in Tito Horford, really thought he could get this guy to an NBA-caliber level. Kind of had a 3-year plan for him, a little bit like Giannis, you know, a little bit like it's a raw project. We're gonna work it out. He had much less playing time than Giannis did. But Del Harris said when they got him at the 39th pick, he ran around the room, acted like an idiot when they drafted him. He was very excited. He'd only been playing the sport for 5 years at that point. He could block shots, but didn't really have soft hands, so he couldn't corral rebounds as well as maybe he needed to do. But he was 7'1". He was a big guy. Harris really took him under his wing. But it just didn't work out. He just never developed. He struggled blocking shots, even in addition to rebounding. At 7'1", if you can't do those two things consistently, not sure there's going to be room for you in the NBA, especially in the 80s. So they did cut him in 1990. But Tito and Al have worked together, kind of funding basketball courts in the town of Puerto Plata in the Dominican Republic, which is where Al Horford was born. So Tito Horford's still a very visible figure in Dominican Republic basketball, and it's still a very big deal there. So this is a legacy, and you'll see him at the games in Celtics jersey. Long ago, eschewing his Bucks loyalty for what his son has. So he's on the other side at this point. But he was a fun little a brief moment in Bucks history. Tito Horford, this week's one quick buck. All right, Jim, let's move into the best part of the show. It's what's making Jim mad.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I am very disappointed.
I'm upset.
Louder!
I'm upset.
Say it louder!
I'm upset.
That's my secret, Cat. I'm always angry.
What's making Jim mad?
So, look. We've discussed this a couple times on this podcast. I'm a golfer. It's a sport. It's my hobby that I do. So there are some things that I guess the golfers do not on a golf course that drive me nuts. And one of them, and they have to be golfers, me, JR, because I don't know who else would just wield a golf umbrella as like a casual umbrella, but like, I don't know where this is started from, but I have seen too many, because now there has been some rain, Milwaukee, right? And around these travels, like the golf umbrella is huge, JR. Huge. Okay. The reason it's huge is because it is meant to cover you and your clubs when you're out on the golf course or in the back of your golf cart. You can prop it open and it covers everything. They're not made for streets or sidewalks. They're not made to be carried on an airplane. and then the flight attendants are like, what do we do with this giant stick? Like, I don't know where, like, if it's just my golfing brethren who've lost their minds and have decided I'm going to have this giant thing that is, you know, is just taking up the entire sidewalk and forth. And look, I understand, right? There, you know, pandemic happening, you see all the crazy outfits, people in the bubbles, and they're like, oh, this is a good way to keep people around. I don't think this is that. I think it's just a total lack of awareness. And understanding that, you know, it's made for one purpose doesn't mean it can go to another. I don't know. It's just, and I'm seeing way too much of it. I don't know what has happened. Where are the regular umbrellas? Like, why are we carrying around the 3-foot thing? Like, it's too big.
Once again, we're going after a big umbrella, big something, although maybe not quite the same context when we were talking about Big Hippo, various others. You know, I haven't noticed this. I will ask this. What do you think? I don't get umbrellas, to be quite honest with you. And I know that seems silly. I just wonder how many people are dedicated to an umbrella. First of all, if I am stuck outside for any length of time in the rain, you have to question your life choices anyway. Like, there's got to be a way not to be stuck outside in the rain. But if I am, I kind of just surrender to it. You know, like, I have a rain jacket, put up the hood, but I'm going to get wet. With an umbrella, yeah, you're protected to some degree, but there's a lot of runoff. You know, it's usually, no matter how big the umbrella is, you're gonna get wet. You're going to get wet. Rain doesn't just fall straight down and roll smoothly off the sides, you know, with wind and stuff. And furthermore, the bigger the umbrella, the bigger problem you have keeping that thing from going inside out in the wind or blowing away. It just feels like, you know, carting that thing around, more trouble than it's worth. You know, just absorb the loss, take the L, get soaked. You can get home and shower and whatever. It's just water, right? Like, I guess, I'm sure there are situations, golf clubs included, that make perfect sense to have a giant umbrella. I don't get the appeal. They feel like they feel like it's an extra, like, thing to babysit that doesn't ultimately help you as much as you want it to, only a little bit. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe there's a huge fandom for umbrellas out there, but I've never gotten them. I think they're a little bit more trouble than they're worth, but I haven't noticed that there's a proliferation of the big fellas out there, Jim. That's news to me.
Yeah, I'm out in the public. I'm in these streets, JR.
I'm
in these streets, and I see these things, and they bother me. Yeah, umbrellas. I mean, I guess you're not gonna lose your golf umbrella. Like, the little pocket ones, I could see those being the things you leave under your chair. You know, if you sit somewhere, you leave it in the office because you thought it was gonna rain, and then you leave the office and it's raining, and you're like, I mean, I get it. I think umbrellas are an urban thing. You know, like the office person walking where they got
to
go.
I mean, I work downtown. I go to the office. I just get wet for a little bit. It doesn't take long. And it's not like I'm parking right next to my building. You know, it's a 5-minute walk. I'm going to get a little wet. But not to the point that I want to be carrying I'm already carrying a bag, maybe my lunch. I don't want to be carrying an umbrella too. Like, just live with it. Rather than have it all down my back because it's running off the back of the umbrella, I have it evenly distributed, and I also don't have to worry about this thing going inside out on me.
That might be operator error.
How dare you? How dare you?
Getting wet under the umbrella.
Yeah, it's just rolling off. Look, I'm a big guy, so maybe it's because I don't personally fit under an umbrella. You might be right. That is user error. But yeah, I've not had enough luck with umbrellas to justify using them in my life. So, pipe down with your big, giant golf umbrellas, everybody. personally, if it's me, just take the L. But if you're Jim, just at least keep your umbrellas in check here. You don't need the supersize, just the little guys. The Milwaukee Bucks have some big games ahead, and when we record next, Jim, I think the series will be over. May 15th will be Game 7, so there's going to be a lot to discuss on the next edition of the Point Forward Podcast. Maybe we slide in here with an emergency pod before Game 7, if necessary. And yeah, we will have to see how it goes. Jim, any last thoughts before I let you go?
Nah, you know what? If you're listening on this podcast, our friends on the game, 97.3 FM, just enjoy the basketball. Don't get caught up in who's shooting free throws and whistles, because that's it's a useless exercise. So just enjoy some really, really well-played defense and some exceptional offensive players trying to work around it, man.
I love it. Thanks for listening to the Point Forward Podcast. Check us out again very soon. Find us in all those usual podcast places. You can also find Jim or I on Twitter. I'm at J.R. Radcliffe. He's at Jim Ozarski. Jim, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
Looking forward to it.
Bye-bye, everybody. Enjoy the basketball. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.